Hi, this is Ananda, president of the Hare Krishna community near Washington, D.C. What follows is a Sunday talk recorded at our temple. Every Sunday, we invite the public for meditation, a talk, and a vegetarian lunch. We'd love for you to join us. More information is available at isconofdc.org. That's ISKCON of DC.org. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the talk.
It's good to be back. Good to see everyone. The obvious verse to speak on with the topic that Ananda presented, that I would be presenting on, would be the last verse of the sixth chapter. 47th verse, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatanintaratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Translation, and of all yogis, the one with great faith who abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me. Such a person is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So in the interest of time, I will move to just one paragraph of the many that are here. The culmination, Prabhupada says, the culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means, yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions toward the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruitive results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the supersoul by different physical processes, and the mind is on him, it is called Ashtanga Yoga. And when one surpasses the Ashtanga Yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it is called Bhakti Yoga, the culmination. Factually, Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze Bhakti Yoga, minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. So that's what we're going to do today. A little bit. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name, karma yogi, jnana yogi, or dhyana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga, just as when we speak of Himalayan, or Himalayan as it's anglicized, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, is considered to be the culmination. Prabhupada will often translate the word yoga in the Bhagavad Gita in the word for word as yoga. And then in the translation, he'll put devotional service. Some people object to that. Yoga is there in the verse, and then Prabhupada will put devotional service in the translation. Some people are disturbed by that. Now, Prabhupada has a license to do that. I don't, as a scholar, because it would have to be respected in a very accurate fashion to put yoga, you know, in the original as yoga in the translation. But Prabhupada inserts devotional service. And that is because Prabhupada knows that the end of yoga, the ultimate point of all yogas, is Krishna bhakti. So famous scholar who's recently departed this world, but I like him because he's endorsed some of my work, so. But he's a famous fellow, Houston Smith. He said the mystics are the impatient ones. They want perfection now. They don't want to wait to the end of the life and then to find out if there's perfection. So Prabhupada had a certain impatience, which I think was very valuable. Let's not waste time. Let's just call it what it is, devotional service. I mean, yoga, after all, means union. Union with what? Well, union perhaps with my hurt back and my healthy body. That's why some people take up hatha yoga, the physical aspects of yoga. But union means two. So you could be two, hurt back and a healthy body. That could be, you know, the simplest and most superficial two. But really, what the Gita says the two are is the individual self with the supreme self. It's union between those two. You can't say union without understanding inferentially that we're speaking of two. You can't unite nothing. You can't unite one. You have to unite one thing with another thing. And so this is the process of uniting the individual self with the supreme self. Now, what I'm doing lately is I'm trying to show exactly what Prabhupada is saying here. In my translation that I'm working on currently of the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali, which is the famous ancient classical treatise on yoga. It's really the Bible of yoga. I mean, there is no other text that describes the mechanics of yoga. And so in doing this, and I'm preparing it for Yale University Press, in doing this, I'm trying to show the subtle communications that Patanjali offers in the Yoga Sutra. And there are more hidden messages of bhakti in that text than I can even count. I did not expect so much, but they are there. So one of the things that's obviously there in the Yoga Sutra, maybe I should explain. Most people know what hatha yoga is, right? Mispronounced often as hatha. Please don't say that. Okay, it is hatha, hatha yoga. There's no tha in Sanskrit. Okay, so the H is aspirated. Okay, so it's hatha yoga. And hatha yoga refers to the physical practices and the positionings of the body, referred to in the eight-limbed system, ashtanga, as asana, which literally means seated, seating, sitting. But connotatively, positioning the body. So in ashtanga yoga, there is the practice of what is known as Ishwara Pranidhana. This is well known. It appears about four or five places throughout the text, but it's very poorly translated as dedication to God. This is not adequate. Pranidhana doesn't mean dedication. I mean, I'm dedicated to a lot of things. I'm dedicated to my gardening. I mean, I'm dedicated to balancing my bank account, which is easy. There's almost nothing in it. But I like to attend it, to pretend like there's something, going on there. You know, professors are not paid very much. So I attend a lot of things, I'm dedicated to a lot of things. Pranidhana, when you really take it apart, it has the morphology delivers three parts. Pranidhana. Moving, moving forward, moving, deeply, dhana, into the very core of our beings. Now, that's a little different than dedication. I don't move deeply into the core of my very being to balance my bank account. I really don't. Okay? This is very much an activity. This deep probing is the activity one undergoes to discover Krishna in the heart, Ishwara. Now, Ishwara is often translated as Supreme Lord. We do that. Prabhupada does that. Supreme Lord. But Ishwara also has an interesting construction, morphologically. Ishavara. Isha means the center, the ruler, the governor. And vara means circumference. So circumference is really symbolizing Brahman on the one hand, and Isha is the governor, the one that governs the whole of everything, and that would be Bhagavan. And you and I are sandwiched in between. It's a big cosmic sandwich. And we're embraced in that sandwich. We are made of Purusha and Prakriti. We are pure spirit selves, and we have bodies, and we're in the physical world. As the Gita, as the Yoga Sutra likes to describe it, the Gita describes it as the embodied and the body. The Yoga Sutra describes it as the seer and the seen. But they're just exactly parallel. One is permanent, one is temporary. So Ishwara, the way I love to think about Ishwara is the divine center of all reality. The divine center of all reality that we can expect to find when we move deeply within the very core of our beings. Now that's Ishwara Pranidhana. And Ishwara is so Bhagavan with Brahman and with us in between. So Ishwara Pranidhana is one of the five essential practices in the second limb of yoga. So in the Ashtanga, the eight limbs, we have yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Now those eight limbs can be thought of as kind of a ladder. And yamas, and the yamas, or the ethical disciplines, the five ethical disciplines, and the five essential disciplined practices of yoga are part of the external practice of yoga, the outer practice. That is to say, how we act out in the world. And that's a very important part of yoga. And Patanjali goes to great pains to describe what these ethical disciplines are and what the essential practices are. We don't have time to go into all of that. But what I will tell you is that in those practices, Ishwara Pranidhana is listed. So this is an essential practice to yoga. Moving deeply within the core of our beings to discover Ishwara, the divine center of all reality, Bhagavan. So this is considered one of the external practices. But when you move into the Yoga Sutra more and more, you find out that Ishwara Pranidhana is something at the other end of yoga practice. So I just gave you the Ashtanga, the eight limbs. When you get to samadhi, this is considered perfection. Perfect meditation. Complete absorption in the object of meditation. Then Patanjali comes along with the statement, samadhi siddhi ishvara pranidhanat. He says, even though samadhi is already the perfection, there's now a perfection of the perfection of yoga. How about that? There's a perfection of the perfection, and that is Ishwara Pranidhana. So Ishwara Pranidhana is at the beginning and is at the beyond the perfection end, sandwiching in all the rest of the practices. So when Prabhupada puts devotional service in place of, you know, yoga, as far as I'm concerned, he has every right to. It's there in the Yoga Sutra, but one has to know it's there. One has to know what it means. So that is one area that obviously brings out the bhakti dimensions of the Yoga Sutra. But there are others. I will tell you right now the whole point of the Yoga Sutra. The whole point of the Yoga Sutra is to get out of the way of ourselves. Yeah, we're in the way. We're in the way. Get out of the way. This is basically, in essence, now I'll translate that a little further. Like the Gita, in beginning right in chapter 3, is trying to move Arjuna into a place where he is fully self-realized, completely wealthy with knowledge of the self, all to be able to forget about the self and engage in seva, loving seva to the Supreme. He starts this project really pretty much right in chapter 3, goes all the way through and explains that Krishna bhakti is so rarefied and so pure and so selfless that it requires us to become first self-realized and then self-abandoning. But you can't abandon that which you don't have. If I tell all of you that I just gave away $1 million to the temple, you all will be very impressed, but not for very long. You'll look at me suspiciously and say, Garuda, you're a professor. You don't have $1 million. You can't give away what you don't have. So the first process is self-realization. We even have yoga centers called self-realization out in LA and other places. Okay, self-realization. It's also a catchphrase. And that is the project, to first nourish ourselves so thoroughly, so deeply, so purely, that we don't have to even concern ourselves with ourselves. And now we can get out of the way. Now, in the beginning stages of bhakti, in Vaidhi bhakti, we get in the way. It's natural. We get in the way. We get in the way of ourselves. We get in the way of others. You know, we just kind of get in the way. But that's part of the training, Vaidhi bhakti, learning the disciplines of devotional practice. A serious aspirant will apply him or herself to this rigorous bhakti process. And that's commendable. And you'll make a lot of mistakes. You'll get in the way. If you serve here, Ananda will tell you constantly, you're in the way. Whoops, oh, I didn't see Ananda standing there. Okay, well, I was going to say Anuttama, but he, and that would have been safer, I think. Anyway, okay, yeah, probably. But in any case, when we say you're getting in the way of you or others, we're saying that lovingly and supportively to usher you more into the nourishment of Vaidhi Bhakti, the beginning practices that absorb you more and more into an understanding of your own heart in relation to the divine heart. So this is our practice. This is our bhakti. We have our own hatha discipline, but it's not just of the body. It's of the senses, it's of the mind, it's of the intelligence. All of these are aligned to enter into seva, Krishna bhakti seva. It's a very beautiful, beautiful process. Now, once one has been treading that path of Vaidhi bhakti, one enters into Raganuga bhakti. And Raganuga bhakti means an experience of spontaneous attraction for the divine, a love for performing devotional service, a natural inclination. It's inconceivable that you would do anything else. Everything is part of your seva. Nothing is excluded. So in the yoga system, Ashtanga yoga system, they're trying the same kind of thing, but Patanjali doesn't do this yet in relation to an object of meditation. He kind of leaves that up to the practitioner. He says, go along with this yoga practice, but by the way, there is Ishvara Pranidhana. You need to find out who Ishvara is. He doesn't tell you who it is. He also says later, Swadhyaya Ishtadevata. Now this Ishtadevata, many of you from India have heard this phrase, it's a common phrase, Ishtadevata. It comes from the Yoga Sutra. It means finding one's most desired devata, divinity. So, and I like this sort of the approach Patanjali has. His approach is, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but you need to find out. It's sort of like keeping the goods hidden and, you know, one day you'll discover it. It's interesting. Whereas the Gita is so bold, but of course this is within a very personal relationship that Sanjaya is eavesdropping on. And is even able to see the Virata Rupa, the universal form, that was only intended for Arjuna's eyes, but somehow we get to see it too. The 11th chapter. So we have special entrance into this very personal, loving relationship between Krishna and Arjuna. That is not what the Yoga Sutra delivers. The Yoga Sutra is delivering the mechanics of yoga, the mechanics of achieving union all the way to the highest. And in fact, yesterday in the when I was talking at the Smithsonian, I think I used this example. Bless you, someone's sneezing. I think I used the example of a bike. You've seen these bicycles where you pedal and you ride and you go nowhere. Have you seen those? I have no idea what they're used for because you don't go anywhere. I guess people who use those bikes are already where they want to be. Is that it? Anyway, I don't understand all these things, but anyway, you're pedaling away. And in those bikes, I gather it's for the exercise, and you really don't want to go anywhere.
That's hatha yoga.
Hatha yoga. Okay, there we go. Okay. You want to finish up here? So the idea is that, you know, it's the difference between one of those standstill bikes that you're pedaling furiously on and an actual bicycle where the wheels work and you're actually going someplace. You're actually moving toward an object of meditation. An object of meditation that you so love and so treasure. And that would be Sri Krishna Bhagavan, who can be described so simply as supremely beautiful, supremely playful, and supremely delightful. Now that will capture the yogic focus and concentration more than anything. Why? Because first of all, he's everywhere. That makes it very easy to focus on a singular object. If you happen to be with a very small particle within the object of meditation, then potentially you're meditating on him all the time. That would be Brahman. And if you happen to be practicing, and that would be the process of samadhi, everywhere you go, everywhere you are utterly absorbed in Krishna. The kind of samadhi that is called is nirbija samadhi, or nirvikalpa samadhi, or asampragata samadhi. So there are many names, and it gets very complicated. But I'll make it simple for you. It just means that it's total absorption in Krishna, in everything Krishna, and since Krishna is everything, then everything is Krishna. It means total absorption in that without one iota of self-interest. That's what it means. That's what he's trying to say in very technical, very complex language. It's like when you see a movie. You see a movie, and it's a really good movie. You're absorbed in it. You're not dual-tasking, multitasking, or anything. It's capturing your attention, but you're thinking a little bit like, I wonder if that's really true or realistic. You see, the I comes in. You haven't been fully released into the world of the film. So that's savikalpa samadhi. That's sabija. There's a little, abija means seed, a little bit of self-awareness left. But have you ever looked at a piece of art or a piece of poetry that has absorbed you so much, you are so transfixed, you didn't even know how long you were focusing on it? And you didn't even know who you were. You lost your own identity. Not ontologically, in the sense of in reality, you lose yourself into the picture, the painting, but you forget completely who you are, and your only attention is on the world of the painting. I think we've all experienced that, you know, to greater or lesser extents. So this painting that we're focusing on in yoga, this picture is the picture of life. Everything is a picture. How absorbed can we be in that picture? How much can we really focus on that picture? Bhakti yoga is a way of entering Krishna's world, knowing how everything is part of Krishna. Everything makes sense. The little pictures in our lives can be very, very painful, like it was for Arjuna. Little pictures can be very painful. But the big picture is ultimately a loving reality, a loving universe that embraces us. Remember Ishwara, right? The sandwich, that's an embrace. We just need to wake up to that embrace. We need to gain knowledge of that embrace, to begin to experience it and perceive it and live it. This is why Prabhupada calls yoga devotional service. It's the union of the Supreme Self with the individual self. There's so much more I could say on this, but there are so many beautiful places in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra that shows, there's even an explanation of the concept of Bhagavan Kripa, the grace that in meditation, many yogis and yoginis think that it's all up to them. But actually, it is Krishna who gives us the energy through his grace to be able to focus and find him in everything and everywhere. It's a powerful process, and that is described in the Yoga Sutra. But no one else seems to know it, so that's the scary thing. I'm a little scared. So if any of you will help me out on that, and anyone interested in ghostwriting this book with me, that'd be fine. No, I'm just kidding. You know, the problem is, these are unexpected things that will need to be announced. My contention, I'll just stop here and ask you for any comments or questions. My main thesis to my audience, first beginning with the editors at Yale, and that's some small school up north. We people from Harvard, we don't like Yale that much. You know, Yale was started by disgruntled Harvard professors. Did you know that? So this is why I don't know why I'm publishing with them, but anyway, but all that aside, they will see, these editors at this publishing house will see my claim. My claim is simply this: the Yoga Sutra ultimately does not make any sense if you do not understand Krishna Bhakti. Plain and simple. I'll stop there. Any comment? Oh, hey, we're not done yet. Hey, Hey. Yeah, trying to get rid of me? Was it that bad? Okay. I want to hear if you have any comments or questions and so on.
Yeah.
Okay. So who wants to... Does it have to... Do we have to do the mic thing? And it takes 10 minutes to get to...
Excellent speech.
Well, you give me an A? Would you give me an A on that?
A plus oh. A to the power of infinity.
Whoa. I never got that grade before.
But here's my question.
Yes.
As you mentioned, that it has to be Krishna's grace so that we can be at the state of dhyan. Mm-hmm. So no matter how hard I try, unless he showers the grace on me, I will never succeed.
Yes. Now,
so what's the solution?
Well, the thing is that when yoga practitioners are practicing yoga at a very rudimentary level, they actually experience something of Krishna's grace. There's the Antaryaman, the indwelling Lord, that actually acts on them. And we have the statement in the Gita, yaya tamam prapadyante tans taiva bhajamyaham, that is to say that Krishna, however we submit ourselves to him, even unknowingly, he'll reciprocate. And the reason why people stay at yoga centers is because they just go for the back, you know, right? But then they realize something extra is happening there. There's something intrinsically part of yoga that keeps them there. They don't want to leave. They actually don't know where they're going. They don't know where they're headed. But they just kind of keep going. Now, when you walk into this place, oh, we're brought right in there. We know where we're going. So you can take a blind trip or, you know, you can have a map and pictures and a bunch of people are going there at the same time. And they all know where they're going. So, you know, you can take sort of you can get the blind date or that's not a good... Okay, look, we'll just stop there. Okay, that's good. But makes sense then?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You have the mic, okay? Yes.
One question is you mentioned that while explaining Ishvara, Isha is at the center and Brahmanda is on the side and we are in between. But one thing, it appears to me that we are already inside Brahmanda. It is how it could be sandwiched, that is one thing. And even if I take it like that, still what I did not understand is what point that you are trying to explain there for us to take. What is that I need to understand from that example?
Of Ishvara?
Isha is the center and Brahmanda and you are in between. So what is that the in-between has to do? That point actually I did not understand.
Yeah, okay, good. So you don't like my sandwich thing? No. Okay, well, personally I thought it was very clever, but now that you've taken it apart. Brahman, on the one hand, of course, it's impossible not to be in it. But it's also possible not to be aware of it. So in our awareness of Brahman, then we can feel the embrace of Brahman along with Bhagavan or the Antaryaman, indwelling Lord. So on the one hand, Krishna is everywhere. On the other hand, he's located someplace. And so we're in between those two. And in that sense, I claim that there's a bit of a sandwich, you see. But we need to realize that Krishna's embracing us all the time. But we need to realize that yoga is the return embrace. Krishna waits an eternity for us to turn to him. But he's not embracing. You know, I had a grandmother, very dear, and she lived in Manhattan on Fifth Avenue and 78th, okay? And my family would go up from D.C. to visit her, And when we're going up the elevator, I would hide behind my mother. I was like 9 or 8. Because when my grandmother saw me, when she flung open the door, it was like attack mode. She squeezed me so tight. I said, "Mom, I can't breathe." Yeah. Okay. Krishna doesn't do that. I'm sure my grandmother loved me, okay? A little too much. But the point is that Krishna only embraces us as much as we are ready to be embraced. You know, did you ever have a friend that liked you a lot more than you liked them? You had that? That's too bad. Anyway, but I'm bringing it up because, I mean, isn't that annoying, right? I mean, right? We seek balance in relationships, whether we're conscious of it or aware of it or not. You know, sometimes we say, "Oh, you know, you like me more than I like you," right? The quantitative thing, right? And so on. There needs to be balance. We seek balance in all relationships. Well, Krishna is the one who balances. Krishna doesn't threaten souls to love him. He doesn't coerce souls. He doesn't manipulate souls to love him. He waits an eternity. He's not a jealous God. He's a generous God who waits an eternity for us to return the embrace. And then he squeezes harder, like my grandmother. That's only because we're squeezing really hard. Right? Okay, good. Sorry you don't like my sandwich. It's very disappointing. I want you to know that. Is there any? Do we have time for a little? Yeah, I think there's a little bit more time. Yeah. Are we excluding the ladies back there, or are we getting everyone? Are we? Okay. No one's saying. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Just one question. How do you apply this yoga for chanting, basically? Because here we say in meditation, like, you're almost getting out of the way. But right in chanting, we are trying to be there to hear the name of Krishna's.
Yes.
So how do you...
Yes. Now, the chanting, what does it mean? Kirtan. What does kirtan mean? I mean, we have one great kirtaniya right here, okay? No, I'm pointing to Palika. Okay, look, I love Gauravani. I couldn't resist. I'm very sorry. Actually, I'm not. I'm really not sorry. Okay. But what does kirtan mean? Kirt, it comes from the Sanskrit root kirt. And it has two essential meanings which are so significant. On the one hand, kirt means to praise. And praise implies presence, divine presence of Krishna. It also means, the second primary meaning means, is to call out, which means divine absence. Krishna is at once present before all of us and absent before all of us at the same time. So the closer, the more presence we feel of Krishna to us in our lives, in our hearts, in others' hearts, the more absent he feels, because we want more. And so there's this kind of dialectical movement between the two. The more that one increases, the more the other increases. And this is what Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya, went so crazy over. He would see Krishna, he'd run after, and then he would disappear. It would drive him nuts. This is what increases in intensity that moves us to getting out of the way. In fact, Chaitanya was so far out of the way, his body was contorted in all kinds of unidentifiable forms. Fishermen, dished him out of the sea, and he didn't even know it was a human. The Maha Mantra is to call out to Krishna, desperately to call. We want more. That's part of love. At the same time, to realize, oh my gosh, we are all here with Krishna. That's how we get out of the way. Because It's the pure desire to be with Krishna. And I see the presence of administration. That there's Krishna there somewhere, I'm just not sure where. But thank you very much. Hare Krishna.